Hey everyone, this is Josh, host of Urban Valor. Welcome to another episode of the Urban Valor podcast. Today's guest is Marine veteran Miranda Moon. Miranda grew up in Bloomville, Ohio. She and her family didn't have much and struggled to get by. Miranda says her dad never thought she was good enough and would consistently cast doubt on her abilities. She was willing to do anything to get out of her small town of 1,000 people. So she visited a Marine Corps recruiting office. When the Marine recruiters told Miranda they could give her a free ticket to California, she was sold. Unfortunately, she married a Marine who became physically and mentally abusive, which ruined her Marine Corps experience. Miranda leaves us with how she's overcome the trauma she's experienced and how you can too. If you enjoy this episode, go give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment to help support our veterans. The bigger the community, the bigger the impact. If you'd like to contribute your story to Urban Valor or know anyone else who may, reach out on Instagram at Urban Valor TV, or you can email me at josh@urbanvalor.com. Enjoy the show.
My name is Miranda Moon. I joined the Marine Corps and I was a 3521 motor team mechanic. And I had signed up for, I think it was admin, I think maybe logistics and then mechanic, because my recruiter was a mechanic. He's like, that's a good job. Just put it as number three, you know? If you get it, that's fine. I didn't even know how to change a tire at the time. So I was like, you know what? Maybe I probably won't get it, but I had no idea what the jobs meant. I was clueless. Like, how could you know anyway? So I was like, sure, whatever. I just want to leave Ohio is basically the goal here. I served from the end of 2014 to the end of 2018. So I'm from this little podunk town in Ohio. I grew up in a town called Bloomville, if you'd like to look it up. Literally population 1,000. Yeah, it's almost like a ghost town now since they took out the elementary school there. So there's not much going on in my hometown at all. Lived there for like the beginning of my life. And then the last half, I moved to another small town called New Washington, Ohio. Same thing, super small population. But this time I lived on the outskirts of town, kind of like on a farm a little bit, where we had cows, chickens, and, you know, other animals like dogs and stuff. But so we didn't have a lot growing up. I remember majority of our food was from what we would call a food pantry, where basically you just go in, you get a certain amount of food for free or whatever. It was donated because my mom didn't work. And then she just struggled a lot because I had an older sister and a younger sister. And then obviously, like, she ended up marrying somebody that couldn't take care of her fully and then support more kids on top of that. So we just kind of struggled a lot growing up. I remember cringing going to school because my mom had this van. Do you remember those vans where it had like the nose on the end? It's like old, like 90s, super ugly green. The brakes on it screeched. It was horrific, like the most ugliest thing ever. And it was loud. And I was like, I'm mortified about showing up to school in this thing. I'm like, drop me off around the corner. But it was just kind of a struggle growing up. I just remember just a lot of not a lot of happiness. You know, we always joked a lot, but also it was a lot of it's hard to go from day to day because it was always, man, wish I could have that, or we can't afford this. And we never went on vacations. We never really went anywhere. I mean, my mom is like, I love her to death. She's got a beautiful personality, but she just kind of never got past, maybe some beliefs that had been placed onto her, where it limited her and it really affected her in such a way where she didn't think it was possible to have a life outside of what she was, you know, living out. Mm-hmm. My mom married my dad and had my older sister and me, and then ended up divorcing him when I was 2 years old. Mm. Because he had put his hands on my younger sister when she was like super young, and it was for something so small. It was just like overly disciplined. And this is a common trend that I might, you know, get into here in a later conversation. But he was just very strict, and he changed a lot from who he was when they first met to now when he's had three kids. So he ended up becoming born again Christian, and I believe that he was actually brainwashed by a cult. So he was listening to these tapes, and he ended up moving in with this guy who introduced him to the tapes. And so it created this mindset that he had that was just, you have to live by God, for God. There's no gray area. It's either you do or you don't, or your soul literally gets burned up. Like, that's what he believes, is if you don't live by the rules, then your soul is like forever, you know, going to be burned up in hell. That's what he believed. But that also came with a lot of coldness, and there wasn't a lot of love. And it was a very strange dynamic, because I didn't connect a whole lot with my sisters growing up. And I think it was because of this, because I didn't fully understand why my dad was ostracizing me from them and would discipline me a lot more than them and criticize me a lot more than them. I felt like Cinderella in that situation, where I just grew up very confused why I was being treated this way. So everything that I was doing was in an effort to prove myself, to say like, hey, I'm worthy enough, or hey, I'm doing something where you could be proud of me. And this is kind of what leads me into joining the Marine Corps, is kind of like, oh, you doubt me and you don't think I can do something? Well, I'm going to show you that I'm strong. I'm going to show you that I can do something that you don't believe I am capable of doing. Because I remember, for example, one time I was really excited. I told my dad, I was like, hey, I'm going to run a Tough Mudder. You know, it's a 10-mile run. And there's all these obstacles and stuff. And he laughs at me and he says, you haven't ran a mile in your life. He's like, good luck. And I was like, wow. And that was kind of like a recurring pattern, where I would go and tell my dad something that I was like, he'll be proud of this, you know, like, oh, like, he was always trying to teach us math and stuff like that. Or like, oh, look, like, I did really good at this class or whatever. And he would just kind of like not care. And it was just a recurring thing where, like, every time I would try to tell him something, he'd always dampen it down and always criticize it and always make me feel like I just wasn't good enough, and like nothing I was doing I could prove was good enough. So I remember when I was working, I had taken a year off college because obviously I did not come from like a good situation, and debt like was so scary for me, because my mom, obviously, she didn't have good credit. And so that ended up, you know, causing problems. Like, I watched my mom get her car repoed. So that kind of, you know, ingrained in my mind where I was like, I need to have good credit and I need to have no debt. So took a year off college because the college that I signed up for was like, hey, tuition's $20,000, and my FAFSA didn't go through for some reason or whatever. So I was like, okay, we'll work at this bar and grill and save up. But as you know, you're not saving really anything working at some podunk little place in Ohio. I was basically spending all my money on food and gas. So I'm just, you know, working, and I'm like, man, I need to get out of here, because like at this rate, I'm going to save up $500 a year and that's not going to pay for tuition. So I was like, there's got to be something else, got to be something else. And I, you know, I went to bed that night, slept on it, and I wake up, go to work. And it's another dead day at lunchtime, and two Marine Corps recruiters walk in. I had no idea that there was a recruiter's thing right around the corner from where I was working. And so I'm just like shooting the shit with them, and, you know, and the subject gets brought up that obviously they're in uniform. So like, start talking about the Marines, and I was like, hey, can you get me to California? I'm trying to get out of this dump. And they're like, actually, yeah, we have several bases there. And I was like, what do I gotta do? I was like, you guys don't have to do, because you know how like they set up the tags and say like, what words mean a lot to you? And I'm like, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't care about any of this. You said California, that's my ticket out of here. And I was like, I don't care what I need to do. Just tell me what I need to do and I'll do it. And so I show up to the, what are those things called when everybody meets up on like Saturdays, and it's like the depot or whatever.
Yeah, like the recruiter's office, and they're doing like a PT session on Saturdays or something.
Exactly.
For the pulleys.
Right, pulley meet. So okay. I go in, we're meeting all the pulleys, and everybody's acting hard. And it's like, they're like 18 to like 24-year-olds, everybody's acting hard. And I couldn't even run a mile and a half straight. starting out because all I was doing was smoking weed and drinking all the time. I was doing nothing with my life. So that was hard, you know, so I trained, you know, I was like, I'm going to start getting into the gym. And so I started working out and running all the time. And then I got to a point where like I could, you know, run it consistently and like I was good to go. And I actually could do, you know, like an arm hang or a pull up or whatever. And none of my family even believed that I was actually going. They didn't think that I would actually do it until like, I think it was like a week or two before. And I told my mom, I was like, hey, can you drop me off at the thing? Because I got to go. And she was like, are you serious? I was like, yeah, it's like, I'm doing this. Like I've been preparing.
You mean got to go? Like you were ready to go to boot camp?
Yeah. Like getting ready to go to boot camp. And I also never told my dad. My dad didn't even know I was going into the Marine Corps until I was, I think, a month out from graduating. And I think one of my sisters told him. I didn't want him to know because I didn't want his nasty energy to be on it. You know what I mean? I didn't want his doubt to be anywhere near this venture that I had. And then I graduated boot camp and I still never got that I'm proud of you from my dad.
Did he say anything when he did find out you were going in? Did he talk to you or anything?
It was always so brief and I don't even really remember what he had said. But like, I think he was upset because I didn't invite him to the graduation. I think that's what it was. And it's like, I don't want you stinking up my party, you know? And yeah. It's like, you know, you have these parents and you don't really get to choose your parents. And it's like, I chose once I became an adult to just love him from a distance. And that's how it was going to be because, like I mentioned, he was brainwashed at this time. So like, he's very stubborn in his ways and his opinions. And it really caused a rift in our ability to be able to connect, to connect even on a surface level. So I wasn't even able to connect with him deeply. So I was just like, you know what? Like, you know, tell him Merry Christmas every once in a while and leave it at that. But like, there was no real love to be shared or no like real connections to be shared. And especially if I can't tell him all of these accomplishments I'm having in my life and I'm not even getting like, you know, the satisfaction of him saying that I'm proud of you or I love you. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
So
yeah. Talk to me about boot camp. What was it like for you showing up or, you know, did you jump on a bus to get there? Did you fly? Talk to me about the process of getting into boot camp.
Oh man, it's like hard to remember. But so I remember there was a bus involved and then I also had to fly. And I remember sprinting through the airport actually because I was kind of late and you have all these big bags, you know. And I'm like sweating by the time I get there. And it was nerve wracking. Like, I think for anybody, especially from a small town girl, you know, moving away from home, like I barely had been out of the state, you know, and let alone that was my first time ever flying on a plane.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was my first time ever being on a plane. So it was really nerve wracking. The airport gives me anxiety to this day. So. Yeah, pretty sure I got there. I took a bus and then a plane. And then it was just chaos. Getting to the depot or whatever is just chaos. You don't know what to expect. So I'm sweating profusely the whole time. Like, I think anybody's, like, butthole is puckered at that moment. Like, you just don't know what to expect. And that fear of the unknown is just, it was just chaotic. But, like, I think that little voice in your head where you're like, no, you committed to this. You're doing this. Like, you can't bitch out.
Yeah.
And I even remember like there was like, I don't know, we were like in the processing portion and they played this joke on us. It was so twisted where they came out, they sat everybody down. Everybody was super serious and they're like, we're going to war. And they're like, but you have an option. You can opt out now and not go and not go to boot camp and just go back home. Or you can just, or we're going to war. Like we need to like speed up your training and like we're going. And so everybody was like, oh shit. So we like write down like, okay, are we going? And I'm like, I have this bravery, I guess. I don't know, come out of me. And I'm like, I'm going to war. And then like some of the girls said that they would want to go home. And oh my God, they got IT'd the shit out of. They're like, you can't fucking bitch. You're going to be a Marine and you're choosing not to go. Are you kidding me? Oh man, they got lit up. I'm not sure if all of those girls that said they were going to quit graduated. I can't remember, but yeah. So that's where the sick, twisted little game started right off the bat, right at the depot. Yeah. So
do you recall any other stories from boot camp?
Yeah. I mean, maybe they're not as traumatic as other people's, but I remember this one time I was on, on duty or whatever, and like, you know, you have to like stay up and write in the logbooks and like check and make sure everybody's, you know, not doing bad stuff, I guess. But I'm sitting on the box in the bathroom and I'm like studying, and one of my drill instructors that absolutely hated me, Sergeant Nguyen, she's like, oh, we want to sit down and take breaks on, we want to sit down and take breaks on duty. She's like, okay, bet. So she has me take every single canteen that are like lined up on the what are those boxes called? Whatever the boxes are called.
The foot lockers.
The foot lockers. Dump all of them on the floor. And then I have to get on my hands and my feet, like in like a bear climber pose, and scuzz the whole floor until it's dry, not a single drop on the floor. I'm wearing, this is winter time, by the way. I was in Cold Sop on Paris Island, and I'm wearing a sweater underneath my camis. And I'm pouring sweat because I'm scuzzing for literal hours until it was time for me to like be off duty. She had me even take over another person's duty to continue scuzzing.
Oh, wow.
It was horrible. But that's just like a glimpse of the kind of like, you know, messing with it. I remember one time she was like having me like press or tricep press my gun or my rifle and scream, "I ma'am," for literally the entire time when we were doing drill. And my triceps, like, I couldn't do a single push-up the next day. Ooh. It was so bad. The most challenging part of boot camp is the drill was really annoying. I hated drill. So it was just so mundane. But, like, I think once you get to a certain point in boot camp, it's just, like, you're just counting the days at that point. And it's just... I hated running. I still hate running to this day. So running everywhere, that was like the most miserable part. And then not being able to ever enjoy a meal, just having to like stuff it down. And yeah, I would say that was the toughest part. Like PT was not my forte. Now I'm completely different. You know, I really ended up getting into fitness. But when I started out in the Marine Corps, I was not fit. Mm. I was not fit.
talk to me about... Well, where'd you end up getting assigned to?
Okay, so I went to school in North Carolina on Camp Johnson, I'm pretty sure it was. And then I ended up getting stationed in Pendleton, exactly where I wanted to go.
Nice.
So I feel like I manifested it. So I was excited about that.
What was it like getting dropped into your unit as a brand new Marine?
It wasn't horrible because I kind of like already got my street creds because I didn't know how to change a tire before I joined the military. But when I went to school, I was like, I'm going to make sure not a single soul can talk shit on me. I'm going to be the best at my job. And I ended up getting meritoriously promoted for that. So I already went in kind of like saying like, hey, like I work hard and I know my job. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gave me a little bit more respect, but still like the hazing is always there. And like people experience different levels of hazing. Like sometimes it's just straight up abuse, but like my unit was smart with their hazing to the point where they would do everything they possibly could without getting in trouble. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So, you know, field days would be until the very last minute, you know, failing you over the silly stuff. You know how they do that. Oh, that's three strikes, three pieces of dust. So it's like, I found a hair. See you in an hour. So it's just like the mental games. And it's like, that was annoying because it was just like, why are they messing with me? Like, because they tell you when you join the Marines that it's like, is a family like you've never had before, and you don't feel that way when you go in. And I don't know if it's just because you're a female or just because you're new and you're young, and they have to, you know, set that standard where it's like, hey, like we're in charge of you, like you're our subordinates, and this is where you lie. Like you're a janitor for the next 2 years, okay? That's your job. You're a peasant. but I get it. But at the same time, it was like, man, like I really wanted to come here and like have a good experience. And it just ended up not being so great. Mm. Yeah. And I don't know if it was just solely because of the unit I was in, because I didn't experience any other units besides the one I was in, which has a really bad rap. So I can see why. But
Yeah, okay. Talk to me about that. What was your experience like? Because I was just going to ask, you know, were you able to, you know, one of the common themes I see from interviewing female veterans is the difficulty in building camaraderie. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, when I talk to a male vet, they're like, oh, dude, that, like, these guys, like, we're close, we're brothers, we're forever brothers, this and that. Mm-hmm. So what was it like for you? So you said you didn't have a great experience. Were you unable to build camaraderie within your unit, or what was it like?
Yeah, I think, so this doesn't speak for everyone in my unit. There were some really cool people. I did make friends. Don't get me wrong, I'm really good at making friends. But it was like, I didn't feel like I could fully trust the people in my unit. So there was always this kind of like this wall that I couldn't really get past, because I'm like, I don't know if I could tell you everything about me and like what I'm dealing with currently, because I don't know if I can trust you with that information. So I, you know, I would have, you know, I had relationships at work, you know, we, you know, joke with each other, roast each other, of course. Mm-hmm. And I had those kind of relationships at work, but like, work was work, and I didn't hang out with you afterwards. And especially because, we'll get into this too, but when I got to my unit, just a few months after I had gotten there, I started dating a guy, he was a motor T operator and I was a mechanic. So that kind of closed me off as well. And, especially him being who he was, he's very good at isolating me. So that kind of separated me from those people as well. So on top of that, from being a Marine, and then maybe like some of the people in my unit that just weren't, I don't know, they weren't the greatest people. That combined together kind of created a situation where I didn't get that camaraderie. So that's unfortunate, but I still, there's people that I talk to this day. I think they're awesome people. I just never hung out with them outside of work. Yeah, so long story short, I ended up dating him for several years, but like during that time, he was being very mentally abusive and like taking things away from me. Like, I really wanted to get into modeling, but he said, you can't model anymore. So that kind of stripped that from me, and then didn't want me to like hang out with friends because he didn't trust people. And he ended up, he was just very mentally abusive, you know, like, would talk down on me, kind of like I'm repeating a pattern here with my dad. So we ended up getting married. And then right after we got married, he ends up being physically abusive, you know? So he's like trying to control me. And it got to a point where he sent me to counseling because he thought I was the problem. And as I'm going through counseling, I'm learning that he's a narcissist. And she's like, gives me like this whole sheet and slides it over. She says, do any of these characteristics kind of describe your husband? And I'm like, did you interview my husband? Like, I'm like scared. And it got to a point where he was getting physical with me, and like he had busted my lip one time, and he literally rehearsed a story with me before I went to work. And he was like, and then what happened? And I had to say, oh, my friend bumped a beer bottle into my lip, and that's why it's busted through my tooth. And so he was a little, you know, a little psychotic, and would always use, every time I would try to leave, he would say, I'm going to kill myself, and you just go crazy. He'd be blowing my phone up at work. Like, I just remember sitting underneath a truck with a wrench on my chest and just crying and crying, and then not being able to really tell anybody what was going on is what was the hardest thing. And that went on for several months where he was just, you know, being abusive to me, you know, like wouldn't let me wear certain clothing, like tight clothing, because he didn't want people looking at me. Like, lo and behold, he was cheating on me the whole time. So it kind of makes sense why he was like thinking that I was cheating or accusing me of cheating, is because he was doing it. But yeah, so he was a bit of a character for sure. And it got to the point where I was going to counseling, and the lady tells me, I think you might need to get an escape ladder. And I was like, all right, this is where I draw the line. And like, I'm just not, I can't do this. Like, nobody should have an escape ladder from their husband, right? It's not healthy. So when he went to go home and visit his family, I ended up going to my unit and telling them everything that was happening. And so if you know how narcissists work, they are really good at manipulating everyone else's perception of you and creating a perception of themselves that is very good. So they're very good at being a friend. So a lot of his friends were my friends too, and they just couldn't believe that he was doing what he was doing. And a lot of people in the unit couldn't believe he was doing what he was doing. He ended up, he was like texting my gunny, saying a bunch of like lies to my gunny, making up these stories. So it ruined my reputation in the military. So that, on top of going to counseling all the time, people just thought I was skating. And so I was going through this really, really hard time, and I felt like the tables turning on me. So I went from this really good Marine, you know, like doing really good at my job, being firm in who I was, to having this distorted reputation of myself, going through divorce, going through a lot of emotional pain, like constantly being bombarded, harassed all the time by him while I'm at work. So I'm under all this stress and I can't do my job right. So I lose my billet. And now the Marines that I had surpassed, that I'd shown up there with, now they're like, oh, she can't do her job. You know what I mean? Like their perception of me was a certain way because it looked like I was just being lazy, but I was just going through it emotionally. And I couldn't trust anybody to tell them what I was going through. On top of that, being embarrassed because there's a stigma where it's like, don't get married in the Marines and don't, you know, rush into marriage or whatever because you just want to have a house off base or whatever. And I just didn't want to be part of that statistic where I got a divorce. So I really was trying not to have that happen. So I didn't feel like it was safe to tell anybody what was going on. So nobody really understood what I was going through. It just looked from the outside looking in. I gave up and I just sucked at my job now. So that was difficult. So like my last year or so in was not so great because I went from being this stellar Marine to now somebody that, oh, just another Marine that gets divorced and just she's getting out. So she's not a good Marine anymore. So it was tough to say the least to go through that, especially because like not having a lot of connections at the beginning and then going to like really having no connections at all towards the end was hard.
Wow. So he never got any like consequences for putting his hands on you or any of that?
So how we got around that is the whole reason we got married is because he manipulated me in a way where he was saying that, well, I'm getting out at this time. And if we don't get married, then I can't stay here. I'm going to go home and I don't want a long distance relationship and you don't want to leave me, right? And like, I felt like I was in a position where I couldn't leave him because he'd always tell me he was going to kill himself. So I was like, sure, whatever. Like, I'll marry you or whatever. Like, and when you're like working in the military, especially if you've been a mechanic, like you're working really long hours. So it's like, I barely see you anyway. So I was like, sure, whatever, if it makes you happy. Because another thing with narcissistic relationships is like you get attached to the person who they were at the very beginning because he's very charismatic, love bombed me and was really good at, you know, making me happy at the beginning. And then he turned into like literal devil halfway through. And then you're always trying to get back to point A, like where we were before. Like you were that person right before. So like, why can't you just be that person? So you do all these things, trying to make them happy, walk on eggshells, trying to make sure you don't upset them, but nothing ever works, you know? But he ended up, talking me into getting married to him. And then he got out. And as soon as he got out, that's when he started putting his hands on me.
Oh, when he got out?
He got out.
And you were still in?
And I was still in. Yeah, I still had a year and a half left at that point.
Wow.
Yeah. Once I decided that I was going to get out, like pretty much 2.5 years in, I was like, I'm getting out. I'm doing something else because it was stripping my independence. It was stripping my creativity. It was stripping me from being who I really was. And I felt like I was just put into this box and I that I wasn't fitting in. And it was just very conflicting because they were trying to tell me, you know, you need to be a Marine 24/7. And I'm like, that's just not me. Like, I can come here, I can do a good job at my work or whatever. And, you know, act like a Marine. But like, when I go home, I'm not a Marine, I'm Miranda. So I want to be Miranda. Like, I feel like you guys are caging a phoenix right now. And I just want to like rip out of this. And so, yeah, every day I was just kind of, you know, 4 a.m., wake up, go to work, can't wait till this day's over. And then they'd be like, oh, yeah, by the way, we're just breaking for dinner. And then we're going to come back and work till 10 p.m. We got moonbeams on our head. And I'm just like, why is it like this? Why is it this way? And it sucks even worse because it feels like you don't have a purpose, especially when you're working in the back, you know, and you're just at a supporting unit. You just feel like you're spinning your wheels. You're like, why am I working on this truck again? The same truck that keeps breaking down for what? For field op to do a test drive. Like, you just don't feel like you're doing a whole lot when you're in that position. And that's where I was at. I was like, I want to have purpose. Like, I want to carry out my days with intention, and I don't feel very intentional doing what I'm doing right now. Yeah. So yeah, I would say I was a little bit not the happiest being.
Right. So did you do anything to plan for your transition out?
Yeah. So I think at the time, I remember talking to, cause you know, they have the interviews with like first sergeant and stuff. I think at the time I was like, I'm going to be a financial advisor. Like, I didn't know. I just wanted to tell them something good so that they'd be like, okay, that's a respectable job, you know? So they gave me the check off, but like, honestly, I had no clue what I was going to do. What I did know I was going to do for a fact is I had bought tickets to go to Thailand as soon as I got out. So, I had gotten these plane tickets, and I was like, I want to go experience something, you know, different. I've never done that before. And so that was the first thing that I did when I got out, you know, literally like as soon as my, that little gap of time was over, I was like, packed my bags, went to Thailand for a month and a half and traveled all over there. And like, that really, was pivotal for me in the sense that I felt like I was free again and I could just be myself and I could just do all of the things that I wasn't able to do before. Do my makeup. I dyed my hair blue right out the gate. I dyed it blue because I just like, this is freedom for me and I can actually express myself fully without criticism. And so, yeah, that was really big for me. And then I eventually, when I came back from Thailand, I was like, okay, now I gotta go to school. You know, I need to figure out a school that I actually enjoy. I didn't like the whole college thing. Like, I didn't want to go do a 4-year degree. I thought it was bogus, honestly. Like, I feel like a lot of people that went to school, got a degree, they always say that they don't even use their degree or they don't look for it. They look for experience. So I looked into like different trades or whatever, trade schools, ended up deciding, had this epiphany. I was like, I think I'm going to be an esthetician because during my military time, I had real bad skin because of the chemicals I was working with. And so I got really passionate about helping people heal their skin. So I went to esthetician school, and then that wasn't enough for me. So I went back to school again to be a holistic health practitioner. So I wanted to take that because I wanted to help people heal their skin, not just with facials and stuff, but like with herbs, with like medicine, like herbal medicines. So I went and took that class, and then part of the class was massage therapy. So I got even into that. And then during this whole time, I'm like having a spiritual evolution. I'm just waking up. Like, I read the book, The Secret, and that just triggered something in me where I'm like, wow, I'm really in control of my emotions and I'm in control of how my reality appears, you know, based on the thoughts that I'm thinking and the actions that I'm taking. So I just started taking action and I just started learning as much as I could and started reading again. I stopped reading for the majority of my life. Didn't pick up a book again until I was 24. And I was just like, wow, the amount of information that is in these books is, it could change the complete direction of your life. And it did for me. So
do you recall a specific book that did that for you?
Yeah, I would say the Secret and The Power of Now. The Power of Now is really bold. That was intense. Eckhart Tolle is a really good author I like as well. Very insightful. His perceptions are amazing. As well as the work of Joe Dispenza. He's very, he relates science to energy. So I feel like people that are, I don't know, is it left-brained? People that are left-brained that are very like scientific can even see that, oh, hey, there's something to our physical body. It's not just our, we're not just meat and bones, you know, there's an energetic component. Like there's a spark of life in us that, bridges that gap between, oh, we're just here existing or whatever. It helps you kind of expand your consciousness in a way where you're like, okay, there's a lot more to this universe. There's a lot more than what we think there is. Mm-hmm. I think I had to work through a lot because of the emotional trauma that I experienced throughout my life. And then I ended up learning about generational trauma that got passed down to me as well. So like, on top of all the stuff that I got from my dad and then all of the stuff I got from the military, through my ex-husband, that was kind of really stuck in my energy field. And it was affecting my mood. I'd never experienced anxiety in my life. And now all of a sudden I have anxiety. I felt depressed. The generational trauma was the belief that I'm not good enough or I'm not wanted. Because to tell you a little story, my grandmother, her experience with men was not good either. So her first husband left her because he was gay. Like she found him at a truck stop with another man and then he just left. And then the second man that she ended up, having my mom with, ended up choosing his family because she had, an affair with him. So it was always this cycle where I'm not good enough. Nobody's ever going to love me all the way. And so that gets passed down to my mom because now my mom is living out toxic relationships as well, where it's like a very codependent situation. And so now I'm living out this, I'm not good enough. I'm not valuable or I'm not wanted. So I'm always trying to like prove myself to this person when the person on the other end isn't even somebody I should be proving myself to, number one. And then, yeah, so I had to work through a lot of that trauma in the sense that I still had all this baggage kind of that was putting out this almost like an antenna, like this energy was saying that I am expecting my reality to prove this belief that I have in my subconscious mind. So I did a lot of energy work. I did a lot of subconscious reprogramming in order to release that. There was times when she was talking to my subconscious and she was saying, because she kind of like, she doesn't sedate you, but she kind of like puts you in this like little dream state. And she was talking to my subconscious. She was like, how much anger do we want to release today? And it would be like an attitude. It'd be like none. Like, I don't want to release any anger today. And I'm just like, what the heck? Like, why do I not want to release this? And it was like, just a lot of stuff that I had held in for other people, you know, like not forgiving my dad for like how he treated me. And I just had a lot of epiphanies, a lot of realizations with that where I recognized that holding all of these emotions is hurting me. It's attracting people that are aligning with these negative emotions. And that's not who I am on a conscious level. So yeah, overcoming like self-doubt and overcoming just always questioning myself, questioning my judgment because of how my dad treated me growing up. That was really hard. And then overcoming, the trauma from the relationships. And I just always have these traumas with men. And then it leads to the point where I think I found the love of my life, but it turns out it didn't work out. And then I ended up being single for a few years because I was just like, everything felt empty at that point. Because once you have experienced true love, I feel like anything besides that true love feeling just feels like nothing. And so didn't date for a while. And then, I ended up getting in a situation where I got sexually assaulted by somebody that I had been working for. He had invited me up, to out to dinner with some friends, and then it ended up being where I was like too tired to drive home. It was a long drive home, and he was just like, you should just stay here and it'll be fine or whatever. And I was like, okay, I'll just sleep on this little couch thing. He's like, no, just sleep on the bed. And I'm like exhausted, so I'm just laying there. And I'm not gonna get into it too much, but he just continued to like touch me, and like I kept saying no, but like got to the point where like I just kind of like froze and just laid there and just hoping it would stop. And it was just a weird situation because he was friends with a lot of my friends, and I knew that he had a kid, and like if I said anything, it would be weird. So like I had this mentality where like I just wanted it to go away. Like I just wanted to pretend like it never even happened. But that trauma and somebody invading my personal space and kind of violating me really stayed with my body. And I had I wouldn't say like a small case of PTSD because I was getting heavily triggered just out and about in public. Like going to a gym and a man, if he would look at me like, and he like had like a little bit like you say, he was attracted to me and he like, it felt sexual to me, I would get red with rage and just like start to shake and I would have to leave. And that was consistent for months on end where I was just constantly being triggered by people just looking at me. And that's where I think people just don't, or they don't understand, or they can't relate because they haven't experienced something like that, where it's like, unless you were there, like you don't understand, like simple things can trigger you. Like somebody, I don't know, like maybe during the assault, like he was really touching your elbow or something, and somebody comes up behind you and touches your elbow, like that's a trigger. And it can send you right back into that place. So it's simple things, simple common things that can trigger you. But yeah, that gave me a lot of anxiety. It gave me a lot of, I was really depressed. So I was like binge eating and developed an eating disorder from that. And that was really hard to work through. And so I think I stopped playing the victim card, even though I never really played the victim card, but I just took accountability for it instead of just like reacting to the triggers. I was like, why am I having this trigger? How do I release this trigger? How do I get over this? And so I started looking into things where I was like, okay, like what can I use? I didn't want to go to the VA and say, hey, I have all these problems, and get prescribed medications, because I've always been kind of anti-pharmaceutical. So I was like, what can I do like that will help me with, you know, the PTSD and the anxiety and the depression? And so I found mushrooms again. You know, I was interested before, but then I kind of like, you know, stopped taking them, wasn't too interested. And then I looked into microdosing. And so I was like, you know what, I'm gonna give this a try. Ended up sourcing them and then microdosing. And then months later, this is when I did the subconscious reprogramming, is like in tandem with the microdosing. And my results from that were so profound, releasing the energy and then working with the medicinal mushrooms. I don't even have triggers anymore. Like you can look at me however you want and I'm not going to feel anything anymore. When before that would literally put me in a pit of rage, and I would just like feel like when I would enter the gym, it felt like these claws were like coming on me. Like I felt like I was claustrophobic. I would get like heart palpitations. I'd feel scared. And so to go from that to where I'm at now, it was just such a profound change. And that's why I ended up developing a product, because I know there's so many other service members that have PTSD, maybe obviously not from sexual assault, but so many people are dealing with the same things that I was dealing with. And if they can experience the life that I'm experiencing now and not, you know, where they're at currently, like that is a big service that I can provide. And that is something that like would just make me so happy to, you know, impact somebody's life in that way. And that's why it's what makes me wake up in the morning. You know, when I hear somebody message me and they'd be like, this saved my life. You know, I was on anxiety meds for the last 10 years and now I don't have to be on those because I actually took care of what the problem was, the root of the problem, what the thoughts were, what the cycle was.
What do these vets need to do to like pull themselves out and kind of get to where you're at with especially experiencing trauma that you experience? I mean, you seem like you got a great head on your shoulders now, and it's like you've legit kind of left that behind. Mm-hmm. How do they get to that point?
I think it's just making the decision for themselves that they're going to choose themselves. They're going to choose to break out of that cycle, and their willingness to take action on that. So the willingness comes first, and then it's the vulnerability as well. So being vulnerable enough to be like, you know, and accountable enough to be like, hey, like I have a problem and I need to look for alternative ways to fix it, because we talk about earlier how your friend was on 13 different medications and it wasn't helping. It wasn't addressing what the root of it was. And I think that curiosity or that need to get to what the root of the problem actually is what's going to actually make make moves on their success in their healing journey. So you have to embark on the healing journey for it to even happen. You know, you have to, number one, admit that you have a problem, that you're having these triggers. You have to address the trigger. And then you have to, well, if you're going to use medicinal mushrooms, you have to work with the medicine. So I like to use this analogy where, say, an individual is like, they're driving down a road and there's only one path and there's only one exit. So that's their way to work. They only go the one single way. And there's no other options for them. So they're always going to get the same end result. But when you take medicinal mushrooms, they're like road engineers and they've created four-lane highway with 20 different exits. And now you have all these options, but there's still that road where they could take that exit and go down that same path and get the same result. But the medicinal mushrooms, they open it up so that you can make a choice. You could take action and choose a different route, go a different way and get a different result. So that is necessary. You know what I mean? You can't just expect the mushrooms to be your pill, you know, your cure all. It's not going to fix the symptoms that you're having, but it's going to show you why you're having those symptoms. And it's up to you to decide if you're going to actually make the change or not. So It's making that decision that you want to make a change and you want to have a different life.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You are heavily into exercise now, right?
Yes.
Talk to me about what that does for you, not just physically, obviously, but mentally, but in both aspects. What has, you know, exercise done for you, mm-hmm. and how has it helped you?
Yeah, it's really built my confidence, honestly. That was a big reason why I started, is because my dad, growing up, he would always call me weak, slow, you know, would always like, he'd like body shame me. but yeah, that was always the motivation. I feel like a majority of the things I've done in my life have been out of spite, but I mean, it worked out for the best. So I would say it's helped relieve stress. It's really helped make me, I think it gives you, helps you earn respect in a way as well, because people see that it takes discipline in order to have a healthy, good-looking body. So that's something I wanted as well, is to just be respected, because I was consistently disrespected growing up, right? So that was something that is kind of why I always opted for that. And that's kind of why I went into like a pit of depression during that time when I was triggered by men looking at me at the gym, because like, this is my therapy. I can't have people disturbing my therapy right now. Mm-hmm. So what do I do now is I am an online health coach. So I help people with their fitness programs, their diet programs, but in a healthy way. Cause I know there's a lot of people that kind of stick to like this bodybuilding diet, but they're not really focusing on all of the toxins in our environment. And it's causing a lot of health issues. You know, people are having chronic pain, joint pain, skin problems, fatigue, brain fog, all of that stuff. I help detox people from these poisons in their food, and I help educate them on where they're getting them from and how to kind of clean up their environment, clean up their lifestyle so that they can live a good, strong, healthy life. And they don't have to live with chronic pain. People shouldn't have to live with low energy, poor cognitive function. It's just not necessary to live the way that we're living. It's just so common. But it's not normal. It's been normalized, and it's just, I don't think it's fair. And just knowing what I know, I just need to get the word out that, hey, we're kind of being poisoned over here. we don't have to, feel like we're 80 when we're 25. Right.
Yeah.
So that's my job basically. And then, on top of that, I have a separate business with the medicinal mushroom product. So, Microbloom is my product line, and we really target people, or we're offering a service to people where, or a product to people that are really struggling with mental health. So that is our intent on our product. So,
where can people find you?
You can find me at Miranda Luna, LUNAA, at, on Instagram. And then Microbloom is MYCROBLOOM. That is on Instagram as well, if you'd like to give us a follow.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Any last words before we cut the tape?
No, that's it. I appreciate you having me on and letting me tell my story, because I feel like a lot of people, they don't really get to see this side of Marines. They have a perception of people, especially when they get out, you know, so.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me share.
And it's your story. You know what I mean? Everybody has a different experience, and this is your experience right here. So I really appreciate you coming and taking a seat. It takes a lot of courage to sit down and be vulnerable like this. So thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah, I got bad thoughts that make my mind scared. Hold me hostage and they don't fight fair. Who gon' pray for me and wipe on my tears? Who gon' save me if you not right here? Move this darkness and make my sight clear. Take me away, cause I don't like here. Ghosts of my past, they fill in the night air. Wake me up, I'm trapped in my nightmares.